Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Now back to Ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The Small Business Advocate, Jim Blasingame.
We're back. 34 after. 800-531-3815, toll-free coast-to-coast, and my website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. When you get there, it comes every week by email. Steve Del Bianco is our guest. He is the executive director of NetChoice. You also know him as vice president of the Association for Competitive Technology. He's vice president for public policy over at ACT. As you know, he's been on the show many times talking about that. We got a couple of things we want to talk about today, right, Steve?
That's right, Jim.
It's good to have you back.
Steve, you know, last night, one of the things we've talked about for 4 years, Jim, was the famous Microsoft antitrust case.
Right.
And another shoe dropped in that saga last night when Microsoft announced after the markets closed that they had reached a settlement with America Online Time Warner.
$750 million, right?
A lot of change.
Yeah. Is that the number? Isn't that the number?
That's right.
Wow.
$750 million, and that was to settle a lawsuit that roughly a year ago, January of 2002, AOL Time Warner sued Microsoft for what they asked for. It was $10 billion, and this is about $750 million. But that's
right.
Still a significant sum. And there's other provisions in there that show that both companies are anxious to get this behind them. Today, AOL Time Warner is a very different company than the AOL that battled Microsoft two years ago. Mm-hmm. I think that AOL Time Warner today is dominated by Time Warner. It's a media and content company far more than it is an internet company.
Right.
And they'd rather not be at war with Microsoft, since Microsoft controls so much of the software that will be used to run the content that Time Warner owns today.
Well, and you know, when you got your own problems eating you from the inside, eating you alive from the inside, which I consider AOL to have, and this has nothing to do with any attitude I have about AOL and v. Microsoft. This is just my opinion of that company, Steve. When you've got those kinds of internal problems that are festering inside of you, the last thing you need is an exterior war, an external war.
And the $750 million doesn't hurt either.
That'll sort of salve a lot of wounds, won't it?
I think so.
Well, but AOL is just abysmal right now, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I don't speak out against them a whole lot, and I don't do it for any particular reason. There's no political reason involved. It's just that they're not, you know, the people that I work with who have AOL accounts, you know, they don't get good service. I mean, the service is not good. I don't know. I'm not saying the dial-up's not good, but the email is abysmal. It's awful.
And frankly, no ISP is doing that well in today's environment.
I believe I'm getting all my email, and I know people who have AOL who aren't getting all their email.
And AOL actually brags about the fact that they suppress half of every night's email is suppressed because people have complained to them that it's spam.
Yeah.
Another topic, as it were.
Yeah, exactly. But what? Well, and this, of course, this is leading us into the one of the main issues. But let's get back for just a second to the Microsoft thing. Tell us, you know, you and I and so many others have reported on this thing. As you say, I've been covering this thing pretty diligently for 4 years, and we haven't talked about it in a long time. So maybe this will be the last time. What other steps are there in the U.S. v. Microsoft case? Is there anything?
Well, There are, Jim, two states. The U.S. v. Microsoft went away a long time ago. The United States settled along with,
right.
You know, most of the states
probably
that have been involved.
A year and a half ago or so.
That's right.
Yeah.
But two states didn't like the terms of the settlement, West Virginia and Massachusetts, and they've continued on their own to push for a different kind of a settlement on behalf of those two states. And that case is still underway.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really think we'll know anything till the fall on that case, but that the U.S. government is out of it at this point.
Yeah.
And there is one other, Jim, one other private lawsuit, and it's from Sun Microsystems.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, what do they say, a dying sun burns hottest just before it goes out. Sun's been in a lot of financial trouble lately, and this is, for them, another way to try to gain some cash from Microsoft and another lease on life. And that case will probably wind its way through the courts and the newspapers over the next several months.
Well, but other than the two states issues, the Sun issue is not a bundling issue, is it?
In some respects, it is. And is Sun it? Claims okay. that Microsoft and its own Java technology were unfair competition to Sun's own Java.
Right. Now, in addition to the money that Microsoft agreed, there's also some there was also some concessions that they made for the use of various middleware. And when we come back after these messages, I want you to tell us what that is. And then we're gonna move from this discussion, folks, very quickly into what's being done about spam. How are we gonna deal with spam in the future? Is it gonna be a marketplace solution, or is it gonna be a government solution, or a blend of both? Right after these messages, Steve Del Bianco is our guest. It's 20 Till. Stay with us. We're back at 17 Till. Let me remind you, coming up in the show straight ahead, Stephen Moore is going to join us, and we're going to talk about politics. After Steve, we'll be visiting with Leslie Kossoff, and she's going to help us understand how to be better executive thinkers, and that's coming up in the next hour. Steve Del Bianco is our guest and our longtime good friend. He's the executive director of NetChoice, and we're going to get him to tell us what that is in just a little bit. But before we do, Steve, let's get back into where we were. I wanted to ask you, you know, the whole thing, folks, with the USB Microsoft case started out with some competitors of Microsoft suing them because they were bundling their browser. Steve, in the final analysis, now we can sort of look back and do a little bit of a. I think we waited long enough to do a little postmortem on this, and I know you have many times. Is Microsoft? I know that they've made some settlements. I know they made some concessions. But have they actually admitted guilt, and do you consider what they've done to have been something that they were guilty of?
They had a monopoly market share, according to the ruling the first judge made. Given that you have a monopoly market share, certain activities that you might consider just marketing become illegal monopoly maintenance. Mm-hmm. And a list of six specific activities, mostly having to do with their contract provisions with computer resellers, OEMs, became illegal activities that were ruled to have allowed Microsoft to maintain the monopoly it had on the desktop operating system. Mm-hmm. So it's not even relevant whether Microsoft ever admitted it or not. The settlement indicates that they were happy to agree to stop doing mm-hmm. any activities associated with their contracts that could be construed as illegal maintenance of a monopoly. And it turned out that bundling in the browser was not a significant part of that. As you know, today, every operating system comes with a browser. It's standard operating equipment, just like printer controls are in an operating system. And, you know, the case came down to whether Microsoft was doing certain things with its arrangements with computer resellers that made it tough for Netscape, the browser, to be distributed to users. And all that continues to mystify me today because, well, hundreds of millions of people downloaded the Netscape browser from Netscape's website, so it really didn't matter very much whether it was included on the original computer that you came out of the box with.
Steve, I know what your feelings lie, or your opinions lie with regard to the USB Microsoft case, and I'm using that term just to lump it all into one category, so to speak, even though there were more than one lawsuits. But would you think a disinterested observer would look around and see this whole process and determine that the consumer was helped or harmed by these cases?
I don't think the consumer was ever considered in this case. There was no consumer complaint that gave rise to the case, and none of it has been about consumers. It's been only about competitors who alleged and won in court at suggesting that certain activities that Microsoft did made it tough for competitors
to challenge their
monopoly.
But was there collateral damage force that were consumers part of the collateral damage or not? Did you say?
No, I believe consumers have never been part of this case.
But I mean, were they harmed as collateral, as innocent bystanders? Were consumers harmed by the case?
No, and I think that the judge would bear that out too, because she has claimed many times that, you know, despite Netscape's complaints that they couldn't get on the desktops, hundreds of millions of people still, consumers still were able to download the browser.
Okay.
So I don't believe consumers ever were a factor in the case.
Have they been, nor have they benefited, would you say?
No. I honestly believe that Microsoft has had to change its tactics and to suit the settlement.
Right.
But consumers benefit whenever lots of different companies compete. But they also benefit when companies cooperate. They also benefit when companies integrate more features into their products.
Folks,
to the extent that the ruling makes it tough for Microsoft to integrate features into Windows, that's not so good for consumers.
One of the reasons why, you might be saying, well, why are you guys still talking about this? Well, the reason I'm still talking about it is not even about Microsoft, Steve. It's about this kind of a case that's surely going to appear again. I mean, this kind of a situation is going to pop up again, and what are we going to do about it? I mean, I think the way this has been treated, hopefully, this has created some kind of a perspective, and if not a body of law, that we'll be able to use in the future to keep from having a multiple year situation like this, and maybe it won't happen again. But I
think you've got a great point there. I remember 4 years ago the Assistant Attorney General Joel Klein saying that all he sought to do was a light touch of surgical strike, rifle shot intervention to make the market more efficient. And little did he know what a storm he would unleash with this case. And I think that future attorneys generals and justice departments will also be reticent to start messing around with a market that moves and changes so fast that surgical strikes like this and interventions are impossible to pull off.
Well, it's bizarre and frightening to hear any government official talk about surgically improving the marketplace. I mean, whenever I hear statements like that, that makes me want to, move to Tahiti or something. But anyway, let's move over and talk about spam. Now, what are we going to do about spam, Steve?
Well, I know this. We're going to do something because there's wide agreement that spam is a serious problem. But it's really tough to get agreement, Jim, on the specifics because, for some of us, if you're an ISP, then, spam is a volume problem. It's overwhelming your corporate servers, and you're having to add a lot of people to learn how to filter out the bad actors that are sending spam to your customers.
Right.
If you're a consumer, many times you say the problem is fraud. Fraud, because so many of the emails that come in have misleading subject lines, misleading sender.
Absolutely.
And inside, there's fraudulent offers in there, like the famous, Nigerian general offer.
Oh, yeah. I get two of those a day, minimum. Yeah. Stand by, Steve. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to see what Steve is working on to try to help the spam situation from a marketplace perspective, not from a government regulation perspective. Tim Till, stay with us. We'll be right back.
What would you do if I sang?
We're back at 7 till. Steve DelBianco is our guest. He's Executive Director of NetChoice and Vice President of the Association for Competitive Technology. Steve, tell us what NetChoice is.
NetChoice is a coalition of e-commerce companies and also trade associations, which are really just promoting choice, convenience, and commerce on the Internet.
All right. And how would we find out more about
NetChoice? You go to our website at www.netchoice.org.
.org and also actonline.org is the website for the Association for Competitive Technology. A lot of good information there, and also the netprivacypower.org too. Right.
That's right.
That's the privacy website that I'd like to encourage people to check out as well. Okay, let's get back into spam. And I asked you if there's going to be, how are we going to deal with spam? Is it going to be a combination of market forces and government forces?
It has to be. It has to be, Jim. Nobody in this town, Washington, D.C., believes that a legislation alone is going to solve the problem. And it's already clear that technology alone isn't enough. Even the technology companies, like the Internet service providers, have said, hey, we need some help on the legislative front. We need criminal penalties so that once we work really hard to stop a spammer who's using fraudulent tactics, we can't allow them to simply reincorporate in the state next door, we need to be able to have criminal penalties to stop the individual from doing it. Mm-hmm. So that's an example of the kind of a legislative provision I think we'll see in the bills that are on the table right now.
And are you pleased with that kind of approach?
If the ISPs are claiming that's exactly what they need to do customer service, well, then we're all for it.
Okay.
We're all for it. Because remember, the ISPs are differentiating themselves. They're competing for our customer business by how well they suppress spam.
Right.
And that's how it should be. That's what I mean by a market or technology-driven solution. But
right.
They're saying that in order for them to be able to stop the folks who are generally using fraudulent techniques, they need some criminal penalties, and we would support that.
What are we doing to help those small companies who are sending out email newsletters to opt-in customers, maybe sometimes double opt-in customers, who are using the blind copy approach?
One of the things we're trying to do is to make sure that you can get your customers through an initial unsolicited email. Because remember, you say you're double opt-in, but sometimes it took an unsolicited email to allow people,
right,
you know, to opt out or in your case, to double opt in. So we want to preserve the ability for companies to send unsolicited commercial email as long as it's not fraudulent in any of its identification and as long as it has an unsubscribe option that you're obliged to honor. And to us, that's essential to preserve most of what's good about using email for marketing.
Well, now, what about multiple unsolicited? Like if I send somebody an email to, let's say I get a list and I send out to 5,000 people, an email to 5,000 people, and I just keep sending out to those same 5,000 people, you know, even though I've got an unsubscribe feature on there, I mean, what are we going to do about that?
Until those folks unsubscribe, you're allowed to continue to send them under most elements of legislation. There are some in the spam debate who would say that volume is the problem, and you shouldn't even be allowed to send anything
I have to tell you, it does irritate me. I don't want to have to unsubscribe every time somebody wants to send me something.
And yet, what are you unsubscribing from, Jim? Are you unsubscribing from the sender or from the list owner who is peddling that list of names?
Yeah.
And think about this for a second. Most email spam that you receive, the addresses were harvested illegally. They were harvested off of websites where your email address appeared.
Right.
Or in the case of big ISPs like AOL and MSN, a dictionary attack was used to randomly generate all different combinations of letters and characters until they came up with email addresses that worked.
Mm-hmm.
Now, those two kinds of techniques need to be illegal to stop what we believe is most unsolicited commercial email that has no targeting at all, no benefit to the recipient.
Steve, I got a little bit less than a minute. What's going to be the resolution? A year from now, are we going to be any better off than we are today?
I think we absolutely will. We'll have a couple of legislative tools that will enable ISPs to do a better job stopping spammers. We'll have the FTC stepping up its enforcement. We think the states will become involved, too, because they'll help the federal government to enforce. And we know one thing. We know that consumers are anxious for technology tools and service providers that can help them regain control over their inboxes.
Mm-hmm.
Things will be better in a year.
Legitimate marketers can regain control and not be considered to be spammers, basically.
Jim, I want to keep getting your newsletters, so we're going to make sure they get through.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate that.
Have a great weekend.
Steve Del Bianco, ladies and gentlemen, the executive director of NetChoice. That's netchoice.org, right, Steve?
That's right.
Okay. Check it out when you get a chance, folks. And don't forget also actonline.org. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be greatest entrepreneurial country in the world. And remember, when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.